Tell you the truth, this guy's starting to get on my nerves.
Worry not, Your Highness. I shall dispose of this feathered upstart. I challenge you to a duel.
I accept.
Hey guys, this is Mark Etherington, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good day, good evening, hello, good afternoon, how are you? You doing all right? You all right? Of course you're all right. You're alive. Yeah. My name is Will Kuntz. I'm host of this here program, The Homemade Broadcast, which maybe you're listening to on iTunes or Stitcher. If you just search for The Homemade Broadcast, you can find those things there. Or maybe you're listening to RadioSaintPete.com archive, where you can find all of Radio St. Petersburg, or Radio St. Pete's shows. I like to do that. So I like to, like, extend names. I'll just be like, oh, hey, if I like to do it to Cam Bertrand all the time and call him Camathan just for fun. So I do that with, and apparently I just did it with Radio St. Pete and called it Radio St. Petersburg, which is stupid because you don't want to misbrand your brand, right? That totally defeats the purpose. But anyways, maybe you're listening to Radio St. Pete's archive, or maybe you're listening live, not live, but industry secret, not live, but maybe you're listening on Sunday, 6:15 p.m., right here on RadioSaintPete.com. Following me at 10, you can catch, what is the name of their show? The Indie Circuit. I listened to an episode of those guys. They have some really they play some like really cool music, and they have some interesting little banter back and forth with those two fellas, Mal and Dr. Mobius, Dr. something. I'm not doing a great job at promoting this, and I'm sorry to the Indie Circuit. But you can check them out, 10 p.m. right here on RadioSaintPete.com. I don't think they're on iTunes or anything. I don't know. I should ask. We should communicate better. This is a lesson. I learned a lesson today. Be prepared for what you're doing. And I say this every time, and I never do it. I never do it. And I'm still sick, so I'm going to blame it on that. I'm pretty sure I still have a fever. Got a nice little cough going on right now. So the episode that aired last week was Danny Bevins, and I recorded that one actually like the end of June. So I had Raj in here the week before, and since we had the Sly Bar show coming up, I wanted to get Raj in here and talk to him. So I aired that one before, and I had the Danny Bevins episode banked, so I aired that one later. So I was sick for the Rajel one. Started to get better. I missed work Monday, and then I felt good enough to go back Tuesday. Just took some, like, Advil cold and sinus and stuff. Started to feel better. Then the weekend came around again. It was just a hectic week because we had the open mic Tuesday. We had the show Friday. I didn't get much rest. I didn't rest at all. And then boozing on top of it like an idiot. And I told myself, just don't drink. Just relax. Kick it. You know, you can do that. You don't need alcohol. Some people don't need alcohol to have a good time. I am not one of those people, I learned. So I need alcohol to have a good time. So I indulged both Tuesday and Friday, and indulged pretty hard on Friday, too. So we had a good time that night, and then Saturday night, went out for a little while, just wasn't feeling it, didn't feel well. Sunday, man, came back with a vengeance. So I decided that I was going to have to go to the doctor on Monday because something was going on. So I did that, went to the doctor. I never go to the doctor. I never really get sick. But when I get sick, I get mutant zombie AIDS, and I'm ill for apparently quite a long time. So I went to the doctor, good old Michael Riley, down in Bayfront down there, the Rays team physician. Good guy. Very thorough. No nonsense, I would say, though. I'm trying to explain my symptoms to him. I decided not to take medicine, too, because I could have taken some, you know, NyQuil or something, or DayQuil. Decided not to do that because I wanted my symptoms to be in. I was worried because I was sick for so long. I want my symptoms to be there. I don't want to be lacking anything. And it probably doesn't matter. I don't know why I do these things that I do to myself. But I was like, oh, I gotta be sick for this. Like, I don't want to feel any better at all. So I didn't take any medication, and I felt just like a bag of you-know-what. I just felt terrible. So I'm trying to explain to the doctor what's going on, and we do so. And, of course, he's asking me if I'm exercising because I'm overweight. Yes, I know. This is the guy that told me to eat last time I went that instead of eating two pieces of meat for dinner, I should just have one piece of meat. And I never told him that I had two pieces of meat. He assumed by my body that I, in fact, just ate two pieces of meat. Not true. I don't even eat meat for dinner, Dr. Riley, and I was too shocked to say anything to him that day. But, so this is what I'm working with here, is basically what I'm saying. The guy's a jerk, but he's a good doctor, I think. So I'm trying to explain myself to him, what my symptoms are, and he's looking me over, flashing lights in my eyeballs, in my nose, and in my ears, and in my throat. And I felt like my throat was going to close up, and I was going to die. I thought for sure this was it. In my sleep, good run, man. I'm going to choke to death in my sleep. It felt like my throat was going to close up. I didn't even have a sore throat. It just felt like my throat was going to entirely close. So he said the dangling piece was swollen, I guess, was the deal. But it wasn't that bad. It was fine. So that was good, and then I'm like, you know, what is it? He's like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Here, take this script for antibiotics. It's amoxicillin, 500 milligrams, take it for a week. Whatever it is, this will knock it out, which was kind of it was shocking to me because you would think after all these, you know, they go to school for like a decade, these people, you would think they would know anything that comes across their plate there. But they don't. They don't know much of anything, really, especially like family physicians like that. But yeah, doctors, they don't know anything. So he gave me the antibiotic. I went home, started taking them, feeling better finally, I think. We'll see what the future brings. If this antibiotic, I haven't been on antibiotics in a long time, but you know what, this story's going nowhere. I'm sorry, my guest just got here. And I kind of got distracted there for a second. I try to get these done before the guests come in so they don't have to listen to me do this. So forget the story. It was just a stupid story anyways. I have with me actor Owen Horn, who I know. I got my friend Lindsay, who is Owen's cousin, to harass him to come on here today. And he agreed to do it. So he is sitting right next to me. Owen, that's your cue. You grab your headphones there.
Having me.
Yeah, man, no doubt. Make sure you get that microphone. You got to suck right on it.
Okay.
You can move this thing too at your discretion, so you don't have to sit awkwardly. How you doing, man? Thanks
Great.
For coming in.
Great. How you doing?
Good. We had a very brief introduction as I ran back in to finish up that stupid story that I had. But yeah, so Lindsay, I saw the story in Creative Loafing that you had, mm-hmm. and Lindsay posted it on Facebook. And she said, oh, it's my cousin, you know, oh, I love my cousin. And I was like, oh, all right, well, and Lindsay, I guess, bugged you, and here you are sitting next to me here today.
Yeah, she's like a little sister to me, so.
Yeah? Are you guys like the same age?
No, she's a few years younger. She's
okay.
5 years younger than me.
Oh, right on. How old are you?
I'm 34.
Oh, okay, right on. So you're an actor. You've been in a lot of, you're Tampa based. You've finally started to catch on. Now you're booking some gigs and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I started out, you know, I mean, I tried it in high school, and then I tried to hit it really hard when I was just outside of high school and about 21, and it was just very difficult because there was really no projects going around in the Southeast like there is now. So
is it getting better?
Yeah, yeah. There was zero projects going on when I was that age, mm-hmm. early 20s. So I quit at like 24, 25, and then all of a sudden all these projects come into Louisiana, Georgia, and then Miami at the time. So I was like, all right, I'm going to give this one last shot. And went at it, went back at it in 2009, and now I'm here today 6 years later and, you know, booking the best roles of my career.
Yeah, you've been on True Detective last season, the first season.
Yeah.
Which is an excellent
show.
The
good season.
Yeah. I was going to ask because I thought it was the season two one, yeah. And I'm watching season two.
Yeah.
And you have to be a goddamn genius to know what's going on in that show. I have no idea. I've watched all the episodes a couple times now. I mean, you started to catch on after a little while. Have you seen it at all?
I watched the first three episodes, but I mean, with season one, I watched every episode twice just because you're always missing something. I mean, plus, it's so good to watch it again.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna go back to season one too. That was
season two. I haven't been able to, you know, really catch my interest.
Yeah, I think it's only because it's so confusing. Because it really is so much. There's names that you have to know that they bring back, and you don't even meet the characters, right? So you don't have any face recognition, face name recognition. They're just characters that are involved somehow in the story, but you don't know who they are.
Exactly.
So it's really hard to kind of keep up. But
yeah, I'm behind two episodes, so I'll have to catch up this week.
It's pretty good, man. Colin Farrell, I kind of, lost respect for him, but he did some really bad movies.
Yeah.
But he's really great.
I like him. He's my favorite on the show right now.
I don't know who that handsome guy is, the new guy, but he's pretty good, too. I like him.
Taylor Kish?
Sounds right.
Okay.
I like that guy, too. But so you started, when did you start acting? Did you do, like, stuff in high school?
Yeah,
drama?
I started back in ninth grade, back in, like, 96.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was always interested in it. I mean, I was interested in it since I was, like, five.
Yeah.
But there was just no programs, no acting classes that I knew of, at least, you know, until I branched out and found the Performer Studio Workshop in Tampa, and I mean that changed my life completely.
Is that a acting school?
Yeah, acting school over there in Tampa, off West Hillsboro.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you have to audition for, or were you able
no,
to just take
no,
classes?
No, I mean you go in, you audit, you just take classes, and you do scene work in there and do scenes, and you'll do scenes for casting directors and agents. That's how I was able to get my agents, and then built relationships with casting directors, and now I've just been working.
So one of my questions was, what's your advice for somebody who wants to act? And so I guess
you have to be serious, because there's a lot of people that just say, oh, Owen and I, we went to high school together. I mean, if he can do it, I can do it. No, you have to really have a real passion for something, because I'm not going to go and, you know, to somebody that makes the best pizza in Pinellas County and say, you know, I can make pizzas just as good as him because we went to high school together.
Yeah,
it's very insulting. So you really have to have a passion for what you do. And I would have some acting experience before you go in there, whether it's, you know, go to Ruth Eckert Hall or just take beginner's classes somewhere else, because it is brutal. The woman in there, the teacher, Kathy Laughlin, she is pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And she might scare you on the first day.
Is it, what's it? The routine, like, weekly for classes? Do you have to go, like, 4 days
a week? It's 4 nights a week. I started out 4 nights a week, and then, you know, after a couple of years, I went twice a week, and now I'm, like, once a week, if that, when I'm not working.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now you're getting jobs. You're a busy guy now.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. I guess that's the goal of taking the classes.
Exactly, yeah. Ultimately, you want a career out of it. I mean, it's rare to, you know, do it straight from here, but, I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've never stepped foot in L.A. I've never been in New York in my life.
Really?
And I'm doing it all from Largo, Florida.
That's awesome, man. Because I think I do run stand-up comedy nights down
here. Oh, okay, cool.
So a lot of the comics, that's part of the deal. You got to go to either L.A. or New York, or some guys are going to Chicago, which they have a great scene there. But it seems like if you want to get into, acting, which I think most comedians do comedy because eventually they want to act and do like a sitcom type of thing. That's where they have to end up.
I did it kind of backwards. I was always a comedian, but I wanted to be taken seriously as an actor first, and then that's why I did all the dramatic stuff, and I play the bad guy all the time because, I mean, that's how people view me. But ultimately, my dream was always to do comedy, and now I'm finally doing that. I've been working with Jody Hill and Danny McBride on new episodes on HBO called Vice Principals.
Yeah, that's a new one. That's a follow-up to Eastbound and Down.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with Eastbound and
Down. No, it's just the same people, same creators. I think it's going to be even funnier. Like, I love Eastbound and Down. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be even funnier.
It was amazing how much Kenny Powers, the character, inspired me. And then I looked, and, like, his character is kind of a piece of garbage. But he just had some great one-liners, and just his bravado was kind of inspiring. And I think it inspired a whole new group of people, which I don't know is a good thing.
But, yeah.
Because Danny is not, in interviews I've seen, he seems like a sweet guy, you know?
He is, yeah. I mean, he was great. And actually, you know, his sister lives like 3 miles from me in Largo, so
I don't know, kidding.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. I wonder if he ever comes down here, makes it down here.
I don't think he does.
Probably not, yeah. So were you born in Florida?
No, I was born and raised in Washington, D.C. area. So
okay.
I grew up in Silver Spring and Potomac, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. And when did you get down to Florida?
In August of 93.
Okay, and how old were you then?
I was 12.
Well, did you were you excited about the move to get?
Not at all.
Yeah.
No, I loved DC, and you know, I loved the snow and my friends up there. So I mean, at 12 years old, it was a big culture shock.
Yeah,
you know, moving from, because it was so cultural diverse up north, mm-hmm. and you come down here, and it was a little segregated when I first moved here. So
yeah.
It was like,
it's much better now. I think
it's a lot better than it was 22 years ago.
Yeah, no doubt.
For sure.
So was that kind of a thing that acting, you know, moving down here, you had to get to a new scene? Did you start?
No, I mean, I had nothing to do with acting when I moved. My family just wanted to change. My dad grew up in Largo. He graduated from Largo High School.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted me to do the same thing as him. So we moved here, and but I think living here with all the setbacks and obstacles I've had to overcome, I mean, I think it made me a better actor by living here.
Yeah. So you got here, you were 12, mm-hmm. and then you started acting in 8th grade. Was that just...
Ninth grade, yeah.
Ninth grade. Where'd you go to high school?
Largo High School.
Oh, right on, yeah. Me too. 2003.
2000.
Oh,
so
right
I was there
oh,
while
you were
there.
Yeah, right on.
So that's senior when you were a freshman. Then.
Uh-huh. Did you do any sports or anything like that?
No, that's more of the partier.
Yeah. One of the things I regret about high school was I didn't do anything that I really wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, drama would have been, you know, it's not a cool thing to do. And I wasn't a cool person anyways. I was kind of if not a dork, I was kind of a wallflower. And I had a lot of acquaintances, not many friends, but I wasn't motivated to do anything. And I wish I would have done it now, because seems like it would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I would have gotten more involved with it, because once I reached 10th and 11th grade, I would, yeah, just hit the party scene too much
yeah.
in high school. I mean, at least I was able to graduate.
That's good. Yeah, that's a big
But,
part.
I mean, yeah, my biggest regret from high school, yeah, not playing football, but I was extremely skinny growing up. I mean, I was 145 pounds when I graduated.
Oh, wow. You're a big dude now.
Yeah, I'm like 240 now. So.
I thought at first when I opened the door, I was like, oh, I'm a but luckily, yeah, but was not. But yeah, man. So you started, didn't do any sports or anything. Just went into So you did drama at Largo High.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that kind of experience like? I mean,
it was great. I mean, you know, got to come out of my shell a little bit because I was very shy,
mm-hmm.
especially still trying to adapt to Florida. But yeah, it was great for me. I needed that.
So that was kind of like your first dipping your toes in the water.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
And then you kind of graduated, and it kind of went.
My goal was to, you know, move to Los Angeles and live out of my car like Jim Carrey did, and just praying something would happen. But, I broke my vertebrae right after I graduated, and then I was in a wheelchair for about 4.5 months.
Oh, my gosh. How did you do that?
I was up on a roof and slipped and fell, and my wrist broke my fall, and then my back just fell flat on concrete.
Yikes.
I was done.
So you broke in your back? So
yeah. My lower back.
I did that. Were you like working or something?
I was trying to hook up some cable, and then fell 20 feet. And
is that what you were doing? That was your job after school?
No, I was just helping a friend.
Oh, right. So was it like you were going to graduate high school and then, all right, I'm out, see ya.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
That was the plan, and then that happened.
That was the plan.
Yeah, and then
things kind of fell through, and it was just setback after setback, and I kind of just found acting again at 21 and started going to classes at Ruth Eckert Hall for a couple of years, and then made the decision to move down to Miami because I knew there were some shows going on there, but nothing really came about, and I kind of just got stuck in the working scene out there because I was working at a club in downtown Miami and just kind of got stuck doing that instead of really following my dream.
Yeah. Actor Owen Hart is here joining me on this episode of the Homemade Broadcast. I think I know a lot of people who are trying to follow their dream, and then they get a serving job, and then they start making good money at the serving job, and then the dream kind of gets pushed aside there. And I think that's a pretty common thing that happens to people.
For me, it was always important, and what I tell other actors, it's important. You have to have a job that will pay you enough to, you know, get your bills taken care of, but also that's flexible so you can, you know, run off and take do auditions or callbacks. But it also has to be a job that you hate.
Yeah.
Because if you get too comfortable doing it, then you're going to get stuck doing it.
That's right.
And I hated most of the jobs I did. Mm-hmm. And, that's why acting was always my fallback. And ex-girlfriends would ask me, what's your fallback? You should just go to college and do this. I was like, well, this is my fallback. I really wanted to be tied in for the Dallas Cowboys, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, man, that's it's easy to do, and a lot of people will call you crazy for that, but I don't think if you have a plan B,
mm-hmm.
it's just easy to slip into plan B, because plan B is always rational. And I don't think you can be rational if you're really chasing your dreams. You have to put 100% in. And the chances of actually doing something are so slim. And I think you have to have an understanding of that, too. You can't be afraid to fail.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it happens. But, I mean, then you look at people like it happens for people, like it's happening for you now. I mean, you've been in True Detective, you've been in Walking Dead, too.
Yeah, I've been in Walking Dead. Burn Notice was my first job. I was just in that movie that hit theaters a couple weeks ago called Max with the dog, from Afghanistan.
Right.
Show called Banshee on Cinemax. And I've got a few shows coming up here soon.
Mm-hmm. So do you think you ever get to the point where you're like, I have to go to L.A. now?
Not yet. No, I'm thinking about relocating to Atlanta right now.
That's kind of like the Mecca for the Southeast.
Yeah,
right?
That's where it's all happening right now, and there's no salary cap, so you can do as much work as you want there. I mean, producers can.
Mm-hmm.
It is tough to break into that market, but I've worked there a couple times, so.
That's where Walking Dead's filmed, right?
Yeah.
Georgia.
And casting directors know me there, so, it's just only a matter of time for that thing to really, really blow up. I mean, it's blowing up now, but L.A. will always be the Mecca of the entire, United States, but.
Do you think that will change, like, maybe, because I feel like Florida has so much potential.
Florida has a lot of potential. I mean, there's so much to film here, especially in northern Florida. You can pass that off for the country.
Yeah.
Miami, you can pass off as L.A.
Mm-hmm.
We have beautiful beaches everywhere. I just got done watching that Netflix show, Bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. It was a great show, but I mean, just the shots they got. I mean, it's just beautiful, Key Largo and the Keys.
Yeah, Netflix is doing that. They have a bunch of shows. I watched Sense8. I was sick earlier this week and watched that. That was awesome.
I'm getting ready to start that. That's the next one we're gonna start. So
Daredevil was great too, and that seems like it's gonna be the they're changing what film, how it's produced and how it's taking place. They're dumping money into actual production, mm-hmm. they're going to build that bridge from where they were just streaming TV shows that were on TV. Now they're just making TV and film. How do you think that's going to evolve? Are you?
I think it's definitely going to hurt the film industry.
But they still need, like, a studio, right?
It's only going to hurt actors in a sense of residuals, because we make a lot of residuals off, the movies and TV programs, because the commercials pay us our residuals. When it goes to something like Netflix, we don't see much from that. That's the only way it would really hurt us as actors.
So who gets the money from when they stream on Netflix?
The producers.
Oh, that sounds like you guys need to do something with the producers then, if they're getting all that, because they got to be making a fortune off Netflix. I don't even have cable anything anymore. I just, all my stuff's on Netflix now that I
watch. Cable's so expensive. Yeah.
And so I'm not going to pay to watch commercials.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't even watch any of the TV. The only thing I really watch on TV is when Dallas Cowboys play. That's about it.
Is that your team?
Yeah, I love the Cowboys.
Which is, you grew up in Washington, so that's a little interesting.
Everybody, my whole family was Redskins fans, and I just was the outcast and just love that star on that helmet. And I was like, that's where I want to be.
I grew up a Cowboys fan, too, I think because of Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, those guys, Troy Aikman. I wanted my mom to marry Troy Aikman. And when she married my stepdad, I was pretty upset. I grew up a Cowboys fan, too. I kind of transitioned into being a Bucks fan, but the Bucks were so bad for so many years that it was really hard. And, you know, when you're a kid, you want to root for the winning team. But I still have a soft spot in my heart for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I stuck with them all through those ugly years. And then finally last year, I didn't even expect them to make the playoffs last year. And they almost made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. It seems like they always, every couple of years, make it to the Super Bowl. And then Tony Romo fumbles at the one-yard line.
No, they barely make it to the playoffs. And they'd make it to game 16 and then fall to 8-8 every year, it seems like.
Yeah. I don't know. You think it's changing this year?
Yeah, they got that offensive line going, and they can protect an aging quarterback. And they've got four running backs to
over. Who is the – that's my – because I'm – DeMarco Murray last year for me killed it in fantasy football. He was the reason I had Le'Veon Bell and DeMarco Murray.
Wow.
So I ran through everybody. So my question is that – I know that offensive line is great. Mm-hmm. Who is going to be the running back for the Dallas Cowboys?
I would say Joseph Randle because, I mean, that – Until we watch preseason, Joseph Randle is going to be the guy. I mean, I think he's the fastest guy on the team. But then again, Darren McFadden doesn't have that much wear and tear.
He can't stay healthy, though. That guy gets hurt every year. He's a beast when he's healthy.
But he's got some blockers, and he's a downhill runner. So I think they're going to use him for maybe inside the five mostly.
Like third down back kind of thing.
Yeah, he'll get 10 to 12 carries, but Randle will get the rest.
Yeah, and he never played ball in school. Well, you said you were tiny.
I played basketball, but I didn't play for the school. Mm-hmm. I loved playing basketball. It was my favorite sport to play, but favorite to watch has always been football.
Yeah, I think the basketball team was pretty good when we were there. They had a
decent team. Yeah, Coach Price, I believe, is still coaching there.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was a great teacher. You know, he's one of my favorite teachers there. And now they have a good football team, I think, it's right after I left.
Yeah. What happened was the district lines got switched, so it became about 50-50 black-white, and then it went to about 80-20. That's why the football team got good all of a sudden. I went to one of those games when they played St. Thomas Aquinas, and St. Thomas is like a private school down in Miami. They have buku money. Chris Carter's kid went there, and he was a giant among little boys at receiver. And they paid, I remember, to have Largo's grass resodded. Because they didn't want to play on that field, which I don't blame them. The field was terrible.
Yeah.
But they paid, like 30 grand or something like that just for the one game. And Largo held their own. It was 13-3 at halftime. Largo was up. And I was like, oh, my God, I think they're going to do it. And then they came out in the second half and, I guess, put their starters in or something. Because, boy, they mollywop us.
Good pep talk at halftime.
Yeah. And they haven't been as good, the past few years. But I know Marcus Pascal is coaching them now. Coach Rod had some health problems or something like that. So
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, Marcus Pascal came in. He was
on the Ravens.
Yeah, he was on the Ravens, Eagles.
Did he get a Super Bowl ring with them?
I don't know.
The Ravens?
I don't think so. I don't think he was there when they won. But I think he was just on practice. I think practice squad players do get rings, though.
Yeah, they do.
Keenan
McCardell got one with the Redskins in 91.
Oh, really? Keenan McCardell played for the Redskins?
Yeah, he was on their practice squad.
No,
he was
kidding.
A 12th round pick back in 1991.
12 rounds. And now it's only seven.
That's why when he won one of the Bucks, he was like, now this actually means something to me.
Yeah, right on. So what's your, do you have a plan or are you just kind of playing by ear?
Yeah, I just kind of go with the flow, man. You know, just live life, go to the beach, and when they call me, I audition and then go work.
Do you have like a job? Like you have to.
I was doing construction for a while since like 07. I was doing construction, and I was actually doing construction right before they called me for Max last year. They called me in, and I was like, okay, I'm going to take off for a little while. And I was gone for like 2 months filming.
Do you have to go, can you audition here? Do you just like send in it? I would imagine you could Skype an audition.
I do it from my house.
And was it just like recording it on your
computer? My girlfriend's my reader. She just puts me on tape. And I just upload it and send it to my agent. And the agent sends it to casting, and that goes to producers. And then that's when they make the call and say, hey, have them here in New Orleans or Atlanta or Carolinas. That's where all the filming's happening.
Yeah. Not much in Florida, though. I don't really. No. They had Spring Breakers.
Yeah.
Was shot here. And then they had Dolphin Tale.
Dolphin Tale. But they need so much more.
I think so, too. Yeah. My stepdad was a finalist for the Tampa Film Commission job that was a while ago. Didn't get it, unfortunately. But he had a bunch of ideas because he, you know, was lived here for 30 years or something like that, but they went with a younger person who... it's hard, though, because he's 50-something years old now. He's not a young buck, so they want somebody who's going to stay probably for 30 years.
But, I mean, Rick Scott just needs to get on the ball and open it up.
It's like that. It's really hard to find places to film because he was doing stuff in New Mexico up in for Albuquerque and stuff like that, and they did... you know, some Breaking Bad stuff, but the city commission there was really hesitant to do anything, which I don't understand why, because it seems like it would just be extra income to come into the city.
Because North Carolina got rid of their incentive, and, I mean, nobody knows why. Like, why are they doing that? I mean, it's bringing so much revenue. I mean, look, this year alone, Georgia's brought in $3.1 billion in total revenue. It puts so many people at work. You know, puts production teams, actors, fills hotels up. Mm-hmm. People come and eat at our restaurants. You know, I mean, it just stimulates our economy tremendously.
I wonder.
It's a no-brainer.
It seems like it, because I mean, there must be a reason why commissions are so hesitant to do that. It seems like you said, like a no-brainer, but I mean, there must be certain reasons.
There's something going on that you and I don't know about.
Yeah.
And, I just can't understand.
I know with the Bryan Cranston movie was being filmed, or some scenes were being filmed here. And they were having problems finding suitable candidates who could run, you know, even be extras. They were having problems finding extras.
Wow.
And actually, you just have to sit there, right, usually?
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't even find, and then, of course, behind-the-scenes stuff was even harder because you actually have to be semi-skilled to do the behind-the-scenes stuff.
We don't have much crew here. A lot of them have picked up and gone to Georgia.
Yeah.
Even the ones in Miami. We had so much crew in Miami, and now there's only 3 shows going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't blame the people that, you know, studied this their whole life and worked a grip or behind the camera and want to move somewhere where there's work. I mean, these people have family to feed. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, hopefully they get that figured out because it seems like it would be...
I'm praying. Because I enjoy, you know, I would love to stay in Florida. You know, it's not really, I don't really want to move to Georgia, but that's where the work's going.
Yeah. I mean, it's a short plane ride, too. It's a cheap one. So, I mean, worst comes to worst, just take a flight
It's a 6.5-hour drive from Florida to Atlanta.
Yeah.
I kind of want to be where it's happening so I can work more there.
Yeah, understood. So, tell me about, so you got a girlfriend, you said?
Yes.
How long have you been with your girlfriend?
Almost a year now.
How did you meet?
We actually met in acting class.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, right on. So she was a fellow student?
Yeah, fellow student.
All right. I was just curious because that seems like it would be the lifestyle to be a young, you know, up-and-coming actor and be a single guy. Seems like it would be a lot of fun.
No, I mean, I wouldn't trade her for anything in the world.
That's good. I guess I'm just a broken man at this point in my life.
You know. I guess, I mean, I've seen a lot of actors that love doing that and playing the field and meeting girls in every other city, but I don't know, it's just not me.
Yeah. My cousin was he was on General Hospital in the 80s, and apparently he was kind of a big star. and he always had different chicks, man. And I remember being like, man, that's awesome. Even as a little kid. But he got blacklisted from Hollywood because he was kind of a dick.
Wow. Yeah, so. I've heard of people getting blacklisted from there for for womanizing.
He was in Lethal Weapon 2.
Oh, wow.
He was Goon 2, I think he was billed as. He got his head smashed in a car door by Mel Gibson. That was his claim to fame. But so, yeah, man, so are you settling down, you think, with this
Yeah.
one?
Yeah, settling down. Oh, yeah, she's definitely the one. I've known her. We've been good friends for 5 years, so she's a good woman.
That's good, man. I guess, you know, that's what you want in the long run. It gets tired just going through the same. Dating is really tough, especially dating in your 30s.
Yeah, I don't recommend it.
It's brutal, man. I'm not a fan.
I've never been on the websites, and I talk to my friends, and they're telling me about their Tinder dates, which sounds like a horrible nightmare.
Dude, I'm doing it right now, man. It's rough, dude. It stinks.
They just tell me about these stories about these women, and the women, you know, that I talk to, like my friends, they'll tell me about the crazy guys they meet, and, you know, vice versa. It's just, ugh.
It's not fun. And most of the girls that I find on there are like 23, which is great. That's fun. But I think I'm getting to the age now where I'm ready to maybe, you know, move on and just kind of settle down a little bit. My party years are behind me at this point.
It's still good to go out and have a good time with somebody, but ultimately you want somebody you can, you know, be bored with, you know,
talk to,
watch shows with, binge watch shows, you know, just somebody that's always going to support you and take care of you when you're sick.
Yeah, that's what I missed this week. I was sick this week, and oh, man.
You can't have Netflix can't take care of you all the time.
No, definitely not. That's the thing, too. Like, I have instances where I could, you know, call somebody over.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather not, because I don't want to have to talk to them. And I know that sounds terrible, but it's like, and when I said talk to them, understand, I guess, more than talk. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. To have someone who actually understands what you're saying. And it takes a long time to build that type of rapport, unless you meet the right chick.
Yeah.
I fell in love with one of my friends a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Instant connection. I thought for sure, like, it was one of those people who I felt like you'd known for a long time. And finally confessed my love to her. We're not friends anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what a bummer. I still feel like that was a girl for me that got away. But who knows?
That's usually the best way it starts out, you know. Two of my longest relationships, so they started out, they were just friends.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes we ended up being friends afterwards, sometimes not.
Yeah.
But, like, the relationship I'm in now, I mean, I knew her very well before I just started dating a stranger. I mean, dating a stranger at this age, I mean, like I said, yeah, that would be horrific for me.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of girlfriends when you were younger?
In high school, yeah. Outside of high school, a little bit here and there,
mm-hmm.
but then I just was focused on acting, and I settled down with one person before, and I was with that person for quite some time, and I didn't really date throughout my 20s.
Yeah, I had I kind of did it backwards, because I feel like when you're in your early 20s,
mm-hmm.
you're supposed to just have your fun, right? Meaning, whore around, I guess, basically. So I kind of did the exact opposite. I had a girlfriend from, 19 to 25. Two different ones. So two, long-term relationships. And now that I'm older, I can't keep a girl past 6 months.
Wow.
But I feel like, I don't know if I believe in destiny. Do you believe in destiny?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I kind of do, too. Because I will say that I've been doing this for the past couple years now. Mm-hmm. And it's been getting exponentially better all the time. And I'm working really hard at it. And if I have a distraction, even if it's a good distraction, I don't work as hard. So I feel like for me, this is, I need to be by myself in order to do this, because I'm almost there. I could feel the rock. I'm pushing it up the hill, and it's about to go down on its own. I just need to keep working a little harder, and it's going to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, solitude can be very healthy, you know, especially for doing something like this where you have to work extremely hard. I mean, I'm not saying acting, I don't have to work extremely hard. I do, but at the same time, we don't, like a lot of the actors I'm friends with, they'll focus on working the next job or working their first job.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have somebody and you're going off and you're doing your own thing and having fun, going to the beach, whatever, get your mind off of things, you know, then things just come into play when you're not thinking about it so much. You're not honing all that energy.
Right.
You know, that sometimes it's toxic energy. You're just waiting for that next job.
Yeah.
It just happens when you least expect it, really.
And not appreciating the job that you have now and enjoying it and getting that experience and really concentrating on what you're doing.
Exactly.
And I could see why people would do that because it's such a competitive field.
It is.
But that's really probably not the way to do it. You have to 100% on what you're doing and live in the moment. And I think that's probably true not only with what, you know, you're doing, but in general in life, I feel like people do that, very anxious about the future.
Yeah, for example, like I was working with Andrew Lincoln on Walking Dead, and he said one of the best advice somebody ever gave to me, he said, Martin Scorsese told me a few years ago before I did this show, you know, best advice I can give you is go off and have a family. Get married, have a family. He got married. He said he was on his second kid, and then 2010 they called him on Walking Dead, and there he was. You know, I was like, wow, you know, because he stopped thinking about that next job, and he just stopped and really enjoyed his life, enjoyed his wife, had a couple kids, and then all that distraction was put to the side.
And that's kind of it's human nature to do that. That's why we're here, or that's a reason why we're here, is to procreate and make more so we can continue this human race. So it's kind of ingrained in us to do that. And I feel like now a lot of our generation, and especially the younger ones that are, you know, are in their early 20s now, seem to be rebelling against that. Every early 20-year-old female that I talk to is disgusted by kids. And they're not having kids. Fine, but it's just odd because what's our civilization going to turn into? What's it going to come to?
Yeah, I've met a lot of girls like that, and then by 28 or 32, they're ready to have a kid.
That's probably, their clock's not ticking yet because they do have that internal clock, the sand dial, or what do you call it, sun? Not, the hour, sand.
Hourglass.
Hourglass on the ovaries.
Guys do it, too. I've had guy friends that panic and just marry some girl, you know.
Yeah, I've seen that happen, too. But guys can, you know, have kids at 50, 60 years old.
So I don't think guys panic so much about having kids. I think they panic so much about
being alone.
Getting married because they see everybody else around them getting married, and they feel like they just have to get married. But don't. That's the stupidest thing in the world. Don't marry somebody just to marry them or feel like that's what you have to do. That's just a bad choice. And weddings are very expensive, so.
Yeah. Divorces are expensive, too.
Exactly.
And about, I think it's, 45% of marriages are ending in divorce now?
Oh, no, it's 70.
Oh,
70%.
Really?
Yeah. It used to be 64 for the longest time. Now it's 70% of all marriages end in divorce.
Man, I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting world in the next 20 years. All right, Owen, we're about out of time. I don't know where this interview went. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, I had a great time.
I certainly enjoyed having you. How do people find you if they want to get in contact with you?
You can just you can find me on Twitter or Facebook, or just go on my IMDb page.
All right, you got Twitter? You do Twitter?
I don't really tweet too much. I mean, I've got a page on there, but. And I don't know how to use it very well.
I actually looked at it. It was just links. It wasn't anything.
Like, I didn't really have anything on there.
That's all right. You know.
I need to hire a 20-year-old to run it for me.
One that doesn't want kids. Yep. Instead of having kids, she's going to do actor social media. That's how she's going to spend
great.
Her life.
But,
it's more common than you think.
But I would say check out this fall, Into the Badlands on AMC. I'll be a guest star on episode 2. And then in February, Quarry for Cinemax, I'll be guest starring on there as well, and then Vice Principals recurring guest star in the spring.
I'm looking forward to that one. I'll definitely be watching that one. All right, man, thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
Check out facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast for updates, guests, info, all that good stuff. Check out radiostpete.com and facebook.com/radiostpete. You can find me on Twitter, home_made_man. Open mics are every second and fourth Tuesday. Oh, God. Thank you to Sly Bar and Angelo's for sponsors of this podcast. Appreciate you all. 2061 Central Avenue, Sly Bar, 536 First Avenue North for Angelo's. Thank you all. Have a good one. Talk to you all soon. See you.